So the WMAP experiment is composed, WMAP sensing is composed by Zeus people that would speak on behalf of the team. So mostly people at Godard or Princeton related, and then a few individuals at UBC, Chicago, Brown, and UCLA. OK, so I'm sure you've seen this picture already. And basically, this is what WMAP 1 has done for us, right? So what has it done for us? Basically, it's improvement of a COBE by about 45 in sensitivity, 33 in angular resolution. What you see here is actually intensity fluctuation versus sky, encoding temperature. And the fluctuation you see here are about plus or minus 100 microkelvin. Okay? A simple way to understand this picture is basically to consider that this, what you see here, the temperature fluctuation basically traces the intensity fluctuations at the time of recombination. So what the one way to understand this picture is basically to consider that you have here a picture of the density fluctuation at the time of recombinations. And it is well known that the statistical analysis of this map cannot tell very detailed cosmological information. And so actually after the release of this map, once this map was produced, after 1 year only, so the WMAP mission has met all its requirements. So NASA asked for mission has to be well defined, has some well defined requirements, and all those were met after the first year. So actually it was very tempting to say that mission was accomplished then, but as we know, it has been almost a pretty dangerous statement. And the reason is the following. And so what WMAP 3 has been all about is basically adding those sticks to this map. And those sticks indicate polarization direction of the sky. And the fact that all motivation is that we know that from polarization, we can learn a great deal about inflation theory. So I mean, and also when the universe was very nice. So inflation theory means that polarization pattern can tell us something about when the universe was about trillions per second years old, and also about the realization of the universe when the universe was about 100 mega years old. So we now improve our COBE by a factor of 77 in sensitivity, which is just quota 3, and 33 in angular resolution still. And WMAP 3 has known, we now have measured large scale CMB polarization. And actually, it was quite an adventure because to do so, we had to improve our control of systematics by a factor of 50 as compared to what was initially proposed in a proposal, right? So it's a huge improvement in terms of analysis. And what I would like to convince you is that actually going from year one to year three is actually much more, than just a square root of 3, okay? Because of this added polarization analysis. Okay, so the plan of my talk will be the following. I will give you quick CMB primer first. I'm sure you all know about it, but just to define so that we have common ground. And then I will update on WMAP analysis and what we have been doing the last 2 years. And also, I will present you then a case for large-scale CMB polarization detection before dwelling on the cosmological implication, and first success of Lambda CDM cosmology, and then the new set of questions that we can address with the current data sets. And I can't cover it all because there are a lot of implications, so please feel free to ask any question and stop me anytime. Okay, so CMB, as you know, CMB is leftover from one universe was about 300,000 years old. The universe is expanding and gets cooler and cooler. At some point, it's cool enough so that the Thompson mid-free path of photons exceeds the horizon. And this is recombination. And then basically, the photons decouple from the photobaryonic fluid itself. Okay? And the radiation, this radiation basically has an imprint of the small anisotropy that we grew up later on to form all the structure we see at lower redshift. Okay? So this is when CMB was emitted, and later on the universe gets reionized. So the universe neutralized there, and then it gets reionized later on when the first term formed. Okay, and this is important for polarization. How do we confront the temperature maps to the theory? As a matter of fact, it's actually it is theoretically sound and also observationally motivated to consider the fluctuation from the sky as a Gaussian random field. It means that if you expand the observed temperature field, the TN, in terms of spherical harmonics, so Fourier transform over the sphere, the ALN, so the coefficient of this decomposition, are actually a Gaussian random field. You can consider them to be a Gaussian random field. Because of that, all the statistical information will be contained in the power spectrum, angular power spectrum CL, that you can write as the sum over the norm of ALN. Okay, so that basically means that the comparison between theory and observation will be done at the power spectrum level. Okay, and you can see the CL also as a it's just a variance. It's a power spectrum. It's just a variance at a function of scale. Okay. So now, why is it such a powerful problem? The fact is that this physics that is at play here is actually we are completely in the linear regime, so that we can control very well the physics, and everything is analytical. Okay. And if you want to understand what's going on, you can. It's interesting to look at this plot. So what you have here is L, so multiple, which is inverse of an angular scale. Okay, so you have the angular scale here, so from 90 to from larger scale to smaller scale, and here you have the power spectrum with some L factors. Okay, and it has been known for quite a while, so basically from the 70s, 80s, that looking at the CMB, we should expect to see those features, and to understand those, it's interesting to consider two scales. The first scale is this one, about 2 degrees, okay, which is the size of the horizon, angular size of the horizon at the time of decoupling, at the time of recombinations. So it means that all the points which are separated by more than 2 degrees, okay, so all the part of the power spectrum is here, correspond to the correlation between points on the sky that were not in causal interaction at the time of recombination. So basically, this is leftover from unprocessed perturbation, left over from earlier time, okay? On the other hand, within the horizon, you can describe, you expect to see actually acoustic phenomena which give rise to these peak structures, which actually oscillation of a 3000 Kelvin photobionic plasma within the gravitational, the potential well created by that matter then. Okay, and this gives rise to this succession of peaks. And then you also, you see that at high angular scale, you see some damping, so the peaks are damped here. And this is called a silk damping, and the reason for that is basically the fact that the recombination is not instantaneous, so that you can consider the recombination surface as a finite thickness, and basically all the fluctuation with the wavelength smaller than the thickness will be damped out, because the photon will be, this perturbation will be dumped out as a scattered away within this recombination shell. Okay, and this creates this damping here. Okay, and as I said earlier, this has been known for quite a while. So, and this is all linear regime, well described, well understood. And of course, the nice thing is that if you now compare the same plot to the observations, that's what we have. That's what we see. Okay, same plot, L as a function of L plus one CR. What you see here, it's the best fit model for WMAP. Here's for you, once the same. And what you see here, the black points are the WMAP measurements with error bars. Okay, so the error bars are so tiny here that you can see it. And you see that it's a remarkable fit to the best fit model. Okay, another thing that you see here is this pink envelope. Okay, this pink envelope corresponds to the fact is what we call cosmic variance, which is just it's actually a we call that cosmic error, but it's actually just a sampling error due to the fact that we are on a sphere and we are measuring a finite number of modes, so that you have sampling errors on those modes. And of course, the larger the mode you consider, the larger the angular scale, the bigger the sampling error appears. Okay, but so the implication of that is that actually for WMAP 3, the cosmic variance is greater than the noise till about L of 400, okay, which is about half a degree, which means that we'll never measure the CMB power spectrum or the CMB fluctuation better than what we already did, okay? So this is a definite answer in this regime. On the other hand, if you go to higher angular scale, the cosmic balance goes down, but the instrumental noise goes up, and you reach a level where the signal to noise per L is 1 at about L of 900, okay? And you see the error bars goes up here, blows up. And the other colors are results from other experiments, which are ground-based, no space missions. either bolometers or interferometers, which are sensitive to actually much higher angular resolution. And you see that it's also very good agreement. And so by statistically confronting the best, this kind of model whose prediction is shown here, and those observational points, you can learn a lot about cosmology, okay? Next thing you have to know about the CMB is that it's also weakly polarized, okay? So how does that work? Basically, the linear polarization of the CMB is induced by Thomson scattering of a quadrupolar pattern on free electrons, okay? So first thing, why quadrupolar pattern? Well, you can understand by, if you have a free electron here, if you have homogeneous fluid with homogeneous fluid, non-quadrupolar pattern on incoming radiation, the net polarization will be zero, okay? And then if you have a quadrupolar pattern, so an excess, let's say hot and cold core, and you have an excess in polarization in one direction, you will end up with a net linear polarization. But you notice also that in order for this polarization, you need free electrons. And so those will be available either at the time of a combination or at the time of randomization. So that by measuring polarization of CMB, you are sensitive to either the recombination or the randomization, okay? Since quadrupolar patterns are caused most of the time by velocity flows, so incoming by flows converging towards in a gravitational potential well, and since velocity perturbation will be correlated with density perturbation, you expect a slight correlation between temperature and temperature and polarization. Okay, so it's about a 30% level. Another fact is so the polarization field in the sky is a spin 2 field. Okay, so you can decompose it uniquely in a scalar polarization, a scalar on the sky or pseudo-scalar over the sky. The one scalar part is called the E mode. The pseudo-scalar part of the scalar field is the E mode. And it actually, it's interesting because scalar perturbation to the metric would produce only E modes, whereas tensor perturbation to the metric would produce B modes. So it means that gravity waves, which are expected to be produced at the end of inflation, for example, will produce a very specific signature in a B mode. Okay. And so from those few arguments, you see that polarization actually is very interesting because you're able to probe both perturbations themselves, but also the randomization history, okay? And you do that in a manner which is very specific and very complementary to just temperature observations. So those are very interesting motivations. The bad news, which you can see here, is actually the polarization is quite weak. So it's about only 1% of the signal is polarized. So that means that your signal to noise when you move from temperature to polarization dropped by a factor of 100.
Suppose you had some other kind of theory of gravity that wasn't general relativity, but had vector-type modes,
right.
What would that do to the polarization? Does it have no effect?
Vector modes would produce E and B.
So it will produce differences in E and B that
right.
would be off.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't think it's more than that. I mean, you could actually polarize things during the flight between mass scattering and nowadays, if you look in relativity.
Sorry,
and in relativity, we practice a theory of not polarized light and gravity.
Yeah.
But if you go beyond that,
yeah, that's right. You polarize on the one transit will polarize the light. That's right. So I asked, that's okay. People worked out what is expected in that kind of thing. Well, that's right. But I mean, it's just, I anticipate. I'm just wondering if people have actually ever tried to work it out.
I don't know. Okay. So, no, the demo is over the last 2 years. So, quick primary satellite. I'm sure you know about it. So, but WMAP. It looks like that. So this is a nice movie from NASA. What you see here, I couldn't resist, yeah? okay, but anyway, what you see here is two telescopes, okay, two sides. And what the WMAP measure is measuring, at a given instant, it measures the difference between this side and this side, okay? You also see that the satellite is orbiting around L2, well, you don't really see it, but you see Earth and the Sun here, and basically the satellite is in orbit around the Lagrange point number 2. Okay, so that it's fixed in the Sun-Earth system, and it rotates around the Earth, around the Sun with the Earth, okay? And the distance over the Sun is constant in time.
So it's just a question, how big is it one of his research work, this big one, just curiosity?
It's not a research really, it's just a...
It's a halo orbit.
Yeah, it's a halo orbit, yeah. And it's an unstable orbit. Basically we need correction every 3 or 4 months. Okay. It's unstable. Okay. To recap it, so Sun Earth satellite, and you have the satellite is spinning at about half RPM. And then the axis of the spin is processing at about 1 round per hour, and then you have an extra modulation around the Sun, so every 6 months, okay, or every year. So basically, the scanning strategy, the way we look at the sky, is a combination of 3 different rotations. At a given time, we measure only differences, and the idea is to cancel common mode signal between both sides, okay. We are sensitive to 5 frequencies, ranging from 22 to 93 gigahertz. The fact that you have such a scanning strategy is good because you observe the sky quite quickly, and you actually observe 30% of the sky every hour. So, I mean, you do observe a lot. A nice feature also is that most of the pixels on the sky, most part of the sky, will be observed from every direction. Okay, so that it tends to decrease any kind of systematic due to the beam, which is important. The calibration is performed over the cosmological dipole, which is well known, and the beam measurement is over Jupiter. And we are orbiting around L2, like on point number 2, which allows you to observe all the time, and gives you also the key requirement is to have, since you're measuring very tiny temperature fluctuations, the key requirement is to have a very good thermal stability. Okay. Remark in the analysis over the last 2 years. The differential measurement, so it was designed, as I said, to decrease systematics. The fact that we measure differences only was designed to minimize systematics for temperature. It turns out that it works also very well for polarization. And so this combined with a very interlocked scanning strategy tends to minimize systematics as much as possible. We still have no need for any spin synchronous systematics. As a matter of fact, there is no new systematics that were found in the analysis. The instruments still work exactly as expected. But even the systematics that were known before, to propagate them properly and to account for them for spinorial fields or for polarization fields turned out to be much more difficult than expected. And there are various systematics. The fact, for example, the gain is varying slightly. The fact that you have a non-uniform sky coverage, or the fact that you have a slow 1/100th noise, so your noise is slightly correlated in time, okay? Or the fact that you have also bandpass mismatch, which is the fact that, for example, each side of the frequency, the frequency bandpass in each side of the telescope is not exactly the same. It's the same, but up to 1% and 0.5%, yes?
So the rumor is that you get the default polygon right because of the noise. Is this the one where
It's more galactic formants. I mean, the octopod is widely contaminated, right?
Polarization?
Yeah.
But it wasn't scanning strategy.
Well, I'll come back, sure. Yeah. Okay, so all those are, and you have a lot of subtle systematic, which were well known before, but to account for them for the polarization analysis turned out to be much more difficult. And basically, most of the 2004 year was spent realizing that all the previous pipeline on the previous shortcuts were not able to account precisely enough for this effect in order to conduct a proper system polarization analysis. Okay, and this is mostly why it took so long. And a new pipeline had to be written. Written and optimized and tested. And this is done by a lot of simulation, so end-to-end, so we simulate at a time sample, and then we propagate to the maps, and then to the power spectrum, and eventually to the cosmological parameters. But we have to do a lot of those, a lot of time. And every single state, of course, is qualified by performing as many null tests as you can, so either in time domain, or the maps of year one and the map of year two, and you look at the power spectra, et cetera, and you try to understand the statistic of this test and compare with your noise expectation, et cetera. Okay. Improvement, I won't detail that. Technical. Oh, this is a nice quote, I think, from Chuck Bennett, the PIF and the experiments. That's why it was published in Nature. Opening wise, and this took so long. I think it's very accurate code. So no new systematics, no problem. The instruments work really, still works nominally, but it was the analysis was just difficult. That's all. Okay. Now everything works fine. You can. So we were about to produce maps. For example, first temperature maps. So if you look at a V band, okay, so 60 gigahertz, year one and year three, and the difference between year one and year three. And then W band, year one, year three, and the difference. You see here slight structure, large scale structure, but this is well understood because it's just a change in the game model. So and this is of no this is of no cosmological significance at all. Okay, so it's much weaker than any low end multiple. But basically the maps are completely consistent. Now, which is more exciting, if you look at the polarization maps, okay, from K band, K, Q, to V and W, you see, okay, you might not see it very well here, but what you see here is actually it's a polarization fraction. It's a polarization, okay, so it's just square root of Q, Q plus U. No, square root of Q squared plus U squared, okay? And the white line just is a polarization direction, and the line is depicted only when the signal to noise is greater than one. Okay, and what you see here, for example, on the K band, you see that you have a very coherent pattern all over the sky of those lines. Okay, and this actually you are basically tracing the magnetic field. So what you see at the lowest frequency is not cosmo, it's not CMB, it is actually galactic foreground, a polarized synchrotron. Okay, so cosmic electrons come into the galaxy and they spin around they spin along the magnetic lines on a synchrotron, which is polarized. And you see here, of course, the structure of the well-known structure of the magnetic fields. Okay.
How do you know it's synchrotron? Does it correlate with the temperature templates?
Yes, it does correlate. I'll show you that. And you see also the frequency dependence, right?
Right.
You see that it going from K, so here the frequency increases this way and this way, and you see that it's very strong in K, and it's not, you almost can't see anything in Q. And then here you have V almost nothing, and then W here will be dust. Okay, but
the spectral index could be different for temperature polarization.
True. Probably. Yeah, we don't know, but we think we understand the synchrotron outcome and that in 2 seconds. So
is that the ecliptic you're seeing in the W band?
Yeah, that's the ecliptic. So the, that's galactic coordinates, yes, sorry. So the galaxy in the middle, the ecliptic port would be here and here. Okay, so that's the scanning strategy. Two remarks, right? If you look at this temperature maps, V band, W band, two different frequencies, you look outside the galactic plane, okay, so this is the galaxy again. If you look outside, you see the same features, okay? And this is because we are calibrating thermodynamic temperature. And so what you see here, the common feature are actually the CMB, okay? So if you look at this, if you look at the maps, two different frequencies, you see the same structure, you see the CMB right away. Okay, and it means that the CMB dominates over any foreground. Okay, now if you look at those maps, you definitely can't see any common features. And the reason is that for polarization, the foregrounds dominate over CMB at any frequency. Okay, so it's much all over the sky. And we are either signal dominated or noise dominated. Okay, so that you can get right away that it's much more difficult. Okay. And if you, for example, the K-band, same one, but this time in Lambert projection, so the galaxy is on the edge here, and this is seen from the North Pole and the South Pole, and you also see that you have coherent fissures, so this thick line are coherent even to the pole, okay? So there is no clean area. You see the synchrotron being polarized all over the sky, okay? And this is something quite new, and makes things much more difficult. Okay, so now imagine, I won't show you any notes, but imagine you trust those maps, and I'll encourage you to. If you take the power spectrum of those maps, okay, at different frequency, you take different frequency combinations, what you see here is going from purple, blue, to light blue, green, you go down in you go up in frequency, the synchrotron, signal diminish, and so your signal diminish. But you see also here that the black curve here is what you would expect for CMB polarization, okay? And here is for BB, okay? And so the key thing is that CMB, the foreground dominate over all L of interest for WMAP, which are less than 100, on all frequencies, okay? Which is, again, this is very new as compared to temperature, okay? So how did we clean, how did we understand those foregrounds, and how did we clean them? So I will comment only about the synchrotron. So to comment on JavaScript question, here's, for example, one way you can understand the synchrotron. We live in a spiral galaxy, and if you look at spiral galaxies outside the Milky Way, you can measure their polarization pattern, and most of them have the same pattern when you have the magnetic field that follows the spirals, okay? This is the bisymmetrical polarized pattern. And so, if you assume that our galaxy has the same kind of magnetic field structure, and then you account for all positions within the Milky Way, and then you assume a distribution of electron following a gas distribution of electron with a reasonable model, you can actually predict what should be the polarization of the synchrotron for over the sky for us. Okay, and this is what you see here. This is the polarization direction at angles from 0 to 180. Okay.
So is that a model or is it simply?
That's a model.
So you put a hook at the temperature box and make one out of the polarization.
No, because now this is just the polarization direction, and so the temperature doesn't matter.
No, I mean, but from the temperature, we know exactly where the synchrotron is.
Yeah, but you don't know the polarization direction. Yeah, you know, that's the thing. It's key, right? And so this is a model, and this is what we see in the K-band, okay? And you see that the fissures here, which are so just projection effects, the fissures you see here are just projection effects along the spiral arms, okay? It's not very difficult, just geometry. And you see that what we see here, what we expect to see, is fairly good agreement with what we see, okay? And which is very satisfying. And also, if you look at the polarization amplitude, so the same model, but this time you look at the direction, and also you, as Drew suggested, you take the temperature polarization template in order to predict the amplitude of the polarization. And this is what you have here.
Yes.
And this is also good agreement with the what we see in the lowest frequencies, where the synchrotron is higher. And if you work out the correlation between those map accounting for the noise, I mean, you have a very strong correlation. Okay. So just to convince you that what we see at lower frequency is actually polarized synchrotron, and we can understand it. Okay. Now, I won't detail exactly this process, but with having a well-defined scheme, we can clean each band going from KA to W, and here is the pre-clean maps, okay, for polarization, and here are the clean maps. So you see that we do quite a good job at removing foregrounds here. And then if you compute the K-square statistic over those maps, you can actually see that you are consistent with noise plus CMB only. Okay, you have reasonable K-squares, I won't. But you see that the cleaning is quite efficient enough, but you have to remember that we always ignore, of course, the galaxy, and we have a very thick cut along the galactic plane. So you shouldn't worry about this structure here, okay? And the final power spectrum, so the way to test the cleaning is basically to look at you take the clean maps, and then you look at various frequency combination of those clean maps, and you check that your results are consistent within for various frequency combination, okay, which are in principle different programs. And so we did that. And the final power spectrum is the following for EE and BB. So you
have to describe this. My understanding was that the models you showed us were not used in cleaning your map.
No, it's not used.
So,
yeah, well, I'm just showing you to make it okay that we understand what we saw. But at the end, we used this one here only for cleaning. So we use the K1, the lowest frequency band of the K band, as a monitor for synchrotron, and then we just fit to the other frequency with one coefficient. Because the model is good, but it's not, the model is Well, that's good, but you have more, slightly more information in the K-band, so it makes more sense to do that. Yeah.
And so a question I've heard asked is to what extent is there, do you know if there's a systematic error associated with this thing that you're doing?
Well, that's what I said, right? Basically, if you look at this is a messy plot, but if you look, one way to check that is probably you look at Q only, then you look at V only, then you look at QV cross, and then you look at QW or VW, etc., and you check out that the results are independent, which is the case for all, or for example, it's the case for tau, and it's the case for, well, it's the case for tau, which is what matters for polarization. But the path spectrum also is accounting for the exact noise properties. If you account for the exact noise properties, the path spectrum is stable for all those combinations. If you're asking whether we propagate that in the error budget at the end, we didn't do it formally, but we checked that it's very small, so we didn't do it. But yeah, this was the question.
How do you check the sensitivity
and the results to variation? Basically, as I said, you can assess the quality of the cleaning by looking at the end product and checking that end product, the clean mapping within various frequencies are similar. And also, we tested also various models. So, for example, we tested either using the model I showed earlier onto cleaning using this model, or we also clean using, for example, the K-band only on this kind of thing. So we have various procedures which are, and they're all fairly consistent.
So there isn't a sensitivity to models?
No, I think we're fairly robust at the end. Yeah. So and we use only QV. At the end, we didn't use for topology, we didn't use double.
So the K is used to make the template, and then it's just the same thing you do for the template. So you just find the
code. Yes, that's right. Exactly. More or less the same thing, etc. Well, for temperature, it's slightly more because you have free, so you have to use a combination of K and KA.
Right.
So the procedure is slightly more involved. Whereas here, you have only synchrotron and burst, no free, so you can use with two bands. You can do it with two bands.
And you're excluding this, the over-subtracted region where the galaxy is, are you also excluding the ecliptic
Now you see the ecliptic showing up, but you see it here, for example, clearly, which is just the fact that noise is lower here. This is what you see visually.
For cosmology, though, do you exclude the band around the ecliptic, or is it?
Sure. No, we do. We just cut it here. Okay. No. There is no reason to ignore anything in the ecliptic. But actually, we also tested that by removing the ecliptic on various types of things, it's stable.
But the ecliptic is fine because you have a noise mode.
Right.
So you can put everything to light view.
Right. The
problem with the galaxy is the time is completely out of control.
That's right, yeah. So you want to cut it. But you understand the noise property very well for temperature and polarization. And it wasn't trivial for polarization, but it, at the end, we understand pretty well. I can show you more later if you want. Okay. At the end, this is what we use as a final CMB spectrum that will enter all the cosmological interpretation. So TT that you see here, the black points, TE, that I didn't comment on, okay, and EE is a green one, okay, this point, and here an upper limit on BB, okay. Those four power spectra are what enter in the cosmological interpretations. So,
the diagonal green line?
Here, this is another bad news of the globe, which is actually the limit on foregrounds, the foreground models for EE and BB, okay. Oh, it's a bad news because you see that the foregrounds are fairly dominant over 4BB every L. Okay. What is important for designing future experiments? And this one I'm really known before, right? So we're the first to see now.
No, that's a tragedy, isn't it? I mean, how do you get through them?
Well, yeah, it's difficult. Well, what we need is that you need a lot of frequencies,
yeah, exactly.
And closely. Quite close from each other, not to account for spectral index variation, stuff like that. And you need also higher frequency to go for the dust storm to have the good dust control kind of things.
So, what are those two blue lines? It's going to be different.
Which one?
So those two coming down.
This is EE, this is BB.
Yeah.
This is BB, and this is Lansing.
Okay.
Mm.
So you treat the foreground analysis, you treat galaxies as point sources.
Right, yes.
So you're going to ignore any kind of lensing or homogeneous structure.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, we didn't take into account lensing, which we checked that spot within the individual model.
You did check.
Yeah, of course.
You looked through a spot ground which is structural.
Yeah. You mean lensing by the local galaxy, local group, this kind of stuff. No. Well, this is supposed to be negligible, right? I mean, it has been worked out for quite a while, and this is supposed to be negligible. But then outside extragalactic sources are treated at point sources that we either remove from when they are bright enough so that we can see them when they're resolved. We just see them and remove them. So the ones which are unresolved, we measure them by various levels. So either we measure them by looking at the Bass spectrum, which is a three-point function, and point sources, since I'm on version, will have the contribution then, so we can measure the amplitude this way. And we also, in the power spectrum, point source, unresolved point sources will appear like a flat contribution, but with a very specific frequency dependence. Okay, and so we can control that, and actually both numbers are consistent. So this is how we do it.
What are you assuming for your tensor amplitude here? You must be assuming something for that.
Yeah, sure. I think it's 0.1 here. It's pretty harsh. I think it's 0.1 for this one. I can check, but that's more or less. But even you see that even if you go from 0.1 to 0.3, you're still on. It would be difficult.
So the message is lots of frequencies and high resolution as well.
Well, that's a matter of debate, because what you... No, you don't want... No, that actually the message is the opposite. You want a lot of frequency, but no high angular resolution, because you don't care about the lensing, right?
You don't care about it?
You don't, this is a leakage from the to BB. It's a lensing use.
Yes.
So you don't care about... I mean, it's a, you know, there's no information there. You want this part. You want the pure BB.
Well, there's a window there, right?
There's a window, yeah, exactly, from 100 to here.
Yeah, right.
Right, that's right. But this is, I mean, this is what degree, right, more or less.
So basically, up to 10, up to 20.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay, let me move on. But yeah, I agree. Okay, cosmological implication. First thing, I showed you earlier, the Bessel model after year one, so simplest flat lambda CDM model, which fits the first year data very well, is still a very good fit to the data. And actually, it's an even better fit to the temperature power spectrum. So for example, you see that the chi-square for TT improved from 1.09 to 1.06, went from year one to year three. And it basically means that a lot of points which are slightly out, some outliers, just get closer to the best fit model. Okay, so things are getting better here, and which is good news. So things are very stable. You have also very reasonable chi-square, reduced chi-square for TQU maps. Okay, we have this number for 0.9, okay, which is completely acceptable. So the simplest lambda CDM model, six parameters, dark matter amplitude, baryon, spectral index, NS, the spectral index of the initial perturbation, the amplitude of the initial perturbation, the Hubble constant H, tau, which is the optical depth renalization. So if you fit the six parameters of the data, you still have a very good fit. Okay. And not only, so going from year one to year three, this improvement in chi square and this improvement, this including the polarization and also going to higher L in TT, and what improvement in parameter space. So the first, if you look at this plot here, what you have here is constraint on NS. So NS again is a spectral index of the power spectrum of the initial perturbation, and tau is the optical depth to randomization. Okay, so the way it works, what you have here is that the white contour is actually the double map only year one constraint. Okay, so you see that you have a very severe degeneracy. What is that? It's basically if you change. You see that if you change MS, you will change the amount of power. If you change the slope of the initial power spectrum, you will change the amount of power at high angular resolutions, so high K, so high L. So by varying NS, you are in the plot I showed earlier, you are tilting up and you're moving up and down your CL at higher learning. Okay? On the other hand, tau, so tau is just measure the time of randomization, and so randomization by scattering against incoming CMB photons will tend to smear out the CMB on small angular scale again. Okay, so because you will, because your incoming photon will scatter off, you lose the coherence, and so you will dump your power at small scale. So you understand that both those effects, so varying tau and varying NS, will affect the slope of your power spectrum at high F. Okay, so that's why you have this very strong degeneracy here. The orange contour is doubly marked year one with external data set like Sloan and one supernovae, I think. Okay? And you see that having external data set help, but not that much. And the blue point here, the blue contours here is doubly marked three only. Okay? And you see that there's this very dramatic reduction in parameter space, on which this comes only because you have very specific constraint on tau coming from the large scale CMB polarization. As I said earlier, large scale CMB polarization is sensitive to randomization in a very specific manner, and so that by measuring it, you can nail down tau, and by nailing down tau, you are allowed to measure NS very well. Okay? And so this part here is the main improvement in parameter space going from year one to year three. Okay? And you see that it's driven mostly by polarization. Okay? Now, if you look at what are the consequences for the parameters, if you look at the maximum likelihood model, so the best fit model for year one, and the best fit model for year three, which has two columns here, this one year one, this one year three, for omega b h squared, omega m h squared, h, tau, ns, omega matter, and sigma 8, okay, various parameters, you see that the numbers are actually extremely stable here. So best fit model is more or less identical, okay, which is quite a good news. On the other hand, if you look at 1D marginalized, so not the best fit model, but if you, for a given parameter, you marginalize over all the others, you see that you can have some slight change. For example, the most main important one would be tau, okay, going from 0.17 from 0.09, okay. But you can understand if you look at this plot here, year one, to marginalize over all parameters, basically you're projecting this contour over this curve here, and so you'll see that the peak for the 1D distribution can be anywhere along this line, more or less. Okay, so that's why you can have such a tension, which is only 1.5 sigma. Whereas now, things are much more localized here. Okay, so this is but the key thing is that 1D parameter can have changed a bit, and mostly tau on the amplitude, but the best fit model is still the same. Okay. And you can, all this makes sense. Right.
There wasn't much to say SGNW.
That's right. And actually, yes, yeah, that's okay.
Large error class.
That's right. And it does.
This controls the amount of dark mass.
Exactly. And this is what you see here, actually. This is another degeneracy. That's the second one, which is sigma 8, which is an amplitude as compared to omega m h squared, so omega matter, so which is mostly dark matter plus baryons. Okay? And actually, you see that after year one, you have this, again, wide contour, wide constraint, but actually, doubling up only, doubling up 1 plus external data set, and now doubling up 3 only. Okay? And you see that because and this is driven by the circuit, so measuring the circuit better. Allows you to nail better omega m h squared, which is dark matter.
So you can get this reduction just with two extra points.
Yeah.
That's remarkable.
Yeah, there's a lot of information in the amplitude of the speed.
What about the horizontal analogs?
In the beating?
Before we got
points. Well, we don't use that. They're known, but what you do is that you. Since we observe the full sky, right, the modes are more or less almost uncoupled from L2 at high L. Well, they're not exactly, and we propagate the fact that they are coupled, but you can almost consider them as every single L is independent from the other. So there's no need for vertical advance.
Is that one sigma or two sigma?
This is 68 and 95%. So one sigma and two sigma, basically.
What happens to your Geissler if you remove those 2 points at the peak?
I mean, those points are not specific, right? There are no, those points are just completely, the 2 points, I mean?
Yeah.
They are completely fine, so that wouldn't make sense of really sketch what to change.
Yeah, but I think then the question is about the moment that I think we should.
Yeah, no,
if you didn't have a model like this, you just want evidence for the height of the 3P,
mm-hmm.
that would be, of course, something of a really.
Well, but yeah, right.
And
but
the reason is that the range is actually very wide.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Also, you have to say that, which is not shown here on this plot, but actually earlier, I mean, this peak has also been mapped quite well by those experiments, like Boomerang, so the latest analysis of Boomerang.
The world state.
The world state, huh?
You put in everything.
Right.
Well, but then you have this whole problem of calibration. You like to see everything in my single instance.
Yeah, the case, I mean, okay, so to answer the question, those points have no particular weight in the chi square. And if each, I expect if you remove them, the reduced chi square will be as good.
Okay, so in other words, if I were to ask you what is the height of the third peak, it's just based on this.
Right.
What is the location? I mean, for instance, for the first peak, it is location and height. Right?
Yes, yeah, I can look up the number. Okay, what's the significance of the detection of a third peak?
What have you about?
Yeah. Okay, I don't know the number, but I don't know where to find it. We'll check it out. It's in a paper, actually. Okay. But it's still significant. I mean, it's still significant, right? So that's, I don't know exactly where, but it's still significant. Okay. Well, okay. Just to answer this question, another plot, same plot. So imagine that you use WMAP only, you have your basket model, and you have a distribution. You have an uncertainty into your parameter space. So you can measure n omega n squared to a given accuracy, and this translates into an uncertainty in the CS of for a given n. Okay. And what you see here, the red line is a basket model for WMAP only, and the envelope around the needle would be the 1 or 2 sigma uncertainty for a given L, okay, using WMAP only. And all the points are all the experiments that measure TMBA to higher angular resolution, okay, and you see that they are very consistent with what you would expect from WMAP. And for example, you see the third peak here with those experiments, Boomerang, CBI, etc. This is one thing. But this is CMB only. You can do the same game, but using this time, you use the CMB to set up your initial conditions, okay, at 0,000, and then you evolve this perturbation to a lower redshift, and you try to compare to what any tracer of the local universe will see. And for example, you can use a galaxy survey like Sloan here, whose data points are shown in blue here, and you see that the uncertainties, so the best fit and 1 or 2 sigma are also very consistent with what Sloan sees. So, and this is just, there's no fitting here, it's just WMAP best fit only, and you use it to predict what you should see at low Z, and you see that it is very consistent, okay? Okay, I'll skip that. Okay, so where are we? Basically, means this lambda CM, the fact that we have a successful model, it means that we have a very successful phenomenological model. It means three things, mostly that basically the primordial power spectrum was dominated by, the initial immunogenicity were dominated by the vertical perturbations with an almost Kelly invariant power spectrum. It means that we have a successful GR-based theory to evolve the linear perturbation in time. And it also means that we have a good description of the components, even if we don't know what they are. Okay? So knowing that, we can ask now several set of questions. Either we ask questions within the model and try to learn more about their constituent, for example, about neutrino, or about dark matter or dark energy, or for example, about what's the initial condition, so what is inflation, or did we really undergo an inflation phase, or you can challenge this model and look for anomalies, which will be here. So you can do we see in the data any sign of anomalies? Do we see in the data anything, any sign of something else is happening? OK? And I will cover Zeus very quickly. And I'm running out of time. Okay. I'll skip that. Sorry. Concerning dark energy. So what are the current constraints on dark energy using WMAP or on WMAP plus other data sets? So there are two cases we consider, and probably we should consider only this one. But here, what you see here, so dark energy, as you know, acts as a repulsive force on very large scales. And the way which is to parameterize this usually is to consider this equation of set W, which is Christian over rho. And for cosmological constant, for example, you will have W equal minus 1. Okay, so it's repulsive on very large scale. And for any other models, for example, quintessence, you will have W differing from 1. Okay. And the black line here are the constraints in the omega, here you have constraints in the omega. So W, sorry, omega m plane. So dark energy equation of state versus matter density. Okay. The black line are the volume map only, and the red line, the red contours, would be either the volume map plus alone, the volume map plus 2DF, the volume map plus supernovae, one data set, and supernovae another data set. Okay. And what you see here is that basically we are getting closer to minus one each time, more or less, and we are consistent to, we are always, minus one is always within one sigma, okay? And you see, of course, that including extra data set, and it's well known, like supernovae has a lot to the constraint on W, but we are, and you see that, and so the current limits are, with perturbation, you have the WMAP plus supernovae of minus 0.94 plus minus 0.7 or 0.9. Okay, so you're getting very close to minus one, so to a cosmological constant. Even if, of course, there is room for slight deviation. Okay, so this is an update on dark energy.
So what are the perturbations that were included or not included in
that? It's the perturbation in dark energy. If you allow dark energy to have perturbation or not,
which following the clumping of the
exactly yes, yeah, it's yellow for. So you have no perturbation for the cosmological constant, but for any other, you treat it as a fluid, basically, and just allow for perturbation. And we consider only fixed sound speed, which is the case, which is what's accurate for any inflation, a distance type.
So for when the model for W less than minus one, you
switch them off and
you switch off the perturbation.
Yes,
so
switch off. Yeah. Okay, no inflation. Did we really go through a phase of inflation? So we'll cover that in detail this afternoon, but I'll just cover briefly what inflation is. So inflation was introduced in the 80s basically to solve problem of the classical Big Bang model, like flatness and RS. A key feature is that during a finite amount of time, the universe underwent an exponential inflation, and during this time, fluctuations are generated. Most of the time, this is achieved by introducing a macroscopic scalar field or several with a well-chosen potential. And for a given potential V phi, you can relate the derivatives of the potential with the observable, like the spectral index R, which is tensor to scalar ratios that give you, let's say, the amplitude of gravity waves. On DNS, DLNK, which is a rounding of the spectral index, which gives you the evolution of NF, of the local slope of the path spectrum with a wave map, K, a function of K. And basically, testing inflation is testing the consistency relation within these observables, okay? So if you have to go to Will if you want to learn. Will still if you want to learn more about that. Okay, but what are the inflation predictions? Basically, you have to say that all those predictions were made in the 80s, where all sides were not very well supported, actually, and were not very well supported experimentally. The first one is flatness, okay, which is that we live in a flat universe. And this, we know it's quite true since the Tocco, Maxima, Boomer, and then WMAP, okay? We also, one of these predictions of inflation is that we live in a the power spectrum of the promoter perturbation is nearly scale invariant. And we know that this is less true since COBE, because COBE, for example, in 96 had this constraint already on NS. Okay, so this is not new to the OIMA. Inflation also predicts Gaussian ETF fluctuation, which is a fact that you can consider the fluctuation of the sky as a Gaussian random field. And this was tested thoroughly with WMF1 already, and also the adiabaticity of the initial perturbation WMF1. Also, this is the fact that you have super horizon perturbation. I won't detail that. I'm sure we will. Okay, but what is really new, I would think, now is that inflation also predicts a slight deviation from scale invariance. Okay, so it means that the spectral index is not one. The spectral index is not one, but slightly after one. And this is something we now see, which is, I think, the most important result coming out of our analysis. And as we showed earlier, in this massive NS star degeneracy, the fact that we can make this statement is actually driven by the fact that we measure the optical depth through the large scale CMB polarization. Okay. And so what you see that measuring the effect on randomization on the CMB and has some very important implication on inflation, on inflation predictions, okay, and inflation tests. Okay. And next set of predictions are the existence of gravity waves, but we can't really test that, but future experiments will try. Okay. Okay, for example, imagine the inflation is generated by one scalar field, like a monomial, the potential is just a monomial, just a power log, for phi with a power alpha. And for such a simple model, you have the following consistency relation between R and 1 minus S, okay? So R is the tensor scalar ratio on 1 minus NS scalar index, okay? And N is the number of default during inflation, okay? And what you see here is in the plane, you see constraint in the plane R and S for WMM, WMM plus long, WMM plus 2DA, and WMM plus higher angular resolution CMB experiment. Okay, so you see that you have quite a strong degeneracy here. But there are two things. First, you see that the spot here, which is a horizontal Dodovich power spectrum, which is NS equal 1 on R equal 0, is ruled out at about 2 or 3 sigma, okay, which is something new. Thank you. Also, what you see here is that, for example, those two models, okay, which correspond to lambda 5 to the 4, or the white one, lambda 5 to the square, you see that with the current data set, you're able to separate those models. So you're able to, those are hints, it's not a huge thing, but we start to be able to tell something specific about what happened during inflation, about the potential, for example, the potential of this scalar field. Okay, and which is something very important, and which is new again with OMEGA 3 because of TAR and NS. Okay. Okay, I'll skip that. Testing flatness. So we improve, of course, the test of flatness, and what you see here is that what you see here is in the plane omega lambda, so omega matter. So this time we consider dark energy to be a cosmological constant. And so inflation predicts that we live in a flat universe, okay, and on which in this plot, it means that we live along this line here, okay. Omega n plus omega lambda equal 1, okay. And what you see here is very set of constraints using the volume map only, or the volume map plus Hubble key project prion H. Here, this one, which is WMF plus the baryon oscillations coming from Sloan Sky Survey, WMF plus Sloan, WMF plus supernovae on galaxy surveys. Okay, and it is well known that CMB measurements, not WMF, but CMB measurements in general, have a very strong degeneracy in this plane, which is the diameter angular distance degeneracy. So, which is why this line you have this very wide contour here, okay. But on the other, it's also well known that moving along this line actually, when you move out of this line, which is so WMAP only, you're actually just varying H, okay? So that adding it, another, any kind of measurement on H, like for example, the Hubble Space Telescope key value, allows you to break the degeneracy, and you see here that adding this value allows you to zoom in right onto the flatness. Okay, so we are fairly consistent with the flatness, and the best constraint on the curvature with WMAP plus H are -0.003 plus or -0.1. Okay, so which is it's quite a strong constraint on flatness. Yeah. Okay. Maybe I should start there.
Well, how many minutes are
you? Okay.
40, that was 20 minutes or so?
Yeah.
don't feel restricted if you get bored.
Okay, how many? Okay, so tell me now how many minutes?
Whatever you lost it.
20?
Well, we can
take as long as you want.
Okay, wow. No, don't say that, right? Because it has to add the back as well. So, foregrounds. Okay, now, another prediction of inflation is Gaussian linear perturbations. Okay? So, the simplest thing you can do to look at the Gaussian linear, if you say that your field is a the top of the fluctuation field, the Gaussian random field, the simplest thing to do is to plot the PDF, okay? So, but if you do that, because the noise is inhomogeneous, your PDF won't be Gaussian, because so you have more noise, you observe much more the ecliptic poles than the ecliptic pole than you observe the ecliptic planes, so that basically the noise property can be described by the combination of two Gaussian with a different width, okay? So that if you were to plot the PDF, you were to measure the PDF on the sky, raw sky, you will have a null kurtosis, a non-null kurtosis. Okay, so the right thing to do is to consider this field here, TP, where you normalize by the local variance, the local noise variance, and you account for the noise and the CMD. Okay, and if you consider this quantity here, and this is basically a whitening of your sky, accounting for the noise and the CMD. And if you define this field here, this U field, you should expect to see a Gaussian of unit variance. Okay. And this is what we did, and here's a PDF. The black line is a PDF for various land at resolution 8, which is a 13 unit resolution. Okay. And you see for the Q band, V band, and W band. So the black line is a PDF, the measured PDF, and the red line is just a Gaussian unit variance. There is no fit involved here. Okay, it's just simplest thing you can do. And the first thing you see is that it's obviously fairly Gaussian. Okay, and what means that if you want to look for anomalies or deviation, you will have to look for deviation here, and this will be very small. Okay, but this is the most basic thing you can do, but it gives you a hint that it's to first order, what we see is extremely Gaussian. Okay. Then if you look at various resolution for the V band, so if you plot the PDF at various resolution, you will go from a regime when you are signal dominated at large scale to a domain when you are more noise dominated at smaller angular scale, and you see that over, you see that big Gaussian field all over. Okay. Which is it's a simple test, but it's quite an important test. Okay. But we did, of course, more sophisticated things like the Minkowski functionals, but also the bispectrum analysis. This work performed also the previous year. And still, there are no significant deviation from Gaussian. Okay. I won't detail those. But I will detail the 4-point function, which is a new test we performed. And it was motivated by various claims of that have been in literature from deviation from Gaussian linear on very large scales. Okay. So the situation was the following. On the one hand, you had claims of deviation from Gaussian linear on very large scales, but no bispectrum. So no 3-point detection on any scale. Okay. No deviation from the Gaussian expectations. So one question is that And if you believe all those claims, you can wonder how is that possible? And can we conceive a model where you will have no three point deviation, no three point signal, but non-Gaussianity at the 4-point level? It will mean variation on the field on very large scales. And actually, you can do that, but if you actually know the Bernoulli potential is just written as a product of two fields, okay, with a coupling D and L, if you can write the Bernoulli potential this way, actually you will have no three-point function, because if you take the cube of this thing, you will always have a zero mean, okay. But on the other hand, you will have an excess at the 4-point. So if you want to test this kind of thing, a statistic, you can find out that the optimal statistics for this, let's say we've added G and L, it can be written something like that, where what you do here is that you have TPF is just a filter, a linear filter sky maps, and you take second order derivative of this cube, okay? And you can work out the arithmetics, but this G field is an optimal estimator for this quantity here. And what you see here is for Q band, V, and W band, the red curve is obtained for by Monte Carloing the sky, steamy sky with noise realization, white noise realization. And you see here that you have no detection at all for W band, no discrepancy for V band, but a slight discrepancy for Q band, which is actually, you can understand it as actually residual point sources that were mentioned earlier. And which is fine because you can check that the frequency dependent of this signal is what you expect from point sources, and you also check that when you increase resolution, the signal gets higher because, well, let's say when you decrease resolution, since you are bringing down, you are decreasing your point source signal, and you can check actually that this slight discrepancy goes down, decrease with resolution. Okay. So, but you see here that we have no evolution for. We have no sign for deviation from at the 3 and 4 points. It's no sign from deviation from Gaussianity at the 3 and 4 point functions. Yeah. Okay.
We did
for Minkowski functional, and there is no. We could not spot anything there.
No self.
Yeah, there is nothing significant. But yeah, you can.
It's stated in the Hinshaw outfit that these non Gaussian peculiarities along with, for example, the axis of the.
Yeah, I'm elegantly to that.
You can.
Yeah.
So I.
Yeah, thanks for the.
Hey,
you. Okay, so here we go. testing Gaussianity, then last class of weather fluctuations. I'm sure you have heard of this because you have guest star here. So, this is the status of several issues that were found in the literature after the first year release, okay? The first one was the fact that we have low quadrupole. Okay, and the second one was either the alignment or the asymmetry. Okay, so what is the first one? Basically, you can focus on this plot here. Yes, thank you. Okay, what you have here for n equal to the likelihood of the sky for various value of the quadrupole, okay, L equal to here, LN plus 1 CL, okay? And you see that you have this curve which is peaked here, and you have this very long tail, okay? The first year value was a purple line here, which is based on a quadratic estimator, which is not maximum likelihood estimator, okay? And the fact that we have here is about 180 micro-k squared. And the red line here is an expected value from the best fit model, which is about 1200 microkelvin squared. Okay, so then you see that it's quite a strong discrepancy, and this is what created all this controversy, all this various piece of work about the quadrupole, okay? And actually this quadrupole was observed already by Toby, so it's not specific to the Wally map. But it was pointed in the literature also by those people that actually if you use a maximum likelihood estimator and not the quadratic estimator as was used, and especially if you account for the full shape of the likelihood function here, that is plotted in black, here, the discrepancy is much less. Okay? And so we did change our analysis, we did upgrade that. And actually now the best, and so you see that going if you look for the peak of this likelihood, which is here, you are more in the 220 range rather than 180. Okay. And this changing the estimator and allowing for this also long tail here just decreased very much the discrepancy. And now basically because this tail here is the likelihood of this value is about 15%. Okay. So it's less than 2 sigma. So it's a weight, it's hardly a tension. I'm commenting. No, you're right. Those people pointed out that it was at this level.
But the octopole will change a lot between 2 and 3.
Well, okay, now if you go to the octopole, L equals 3. Same thing here, actually. So black curve is the maximum the likelihood distribution. So purple is the quadratic estimator value, year 1 and year 3. It hasn't changed. But you see that it's fairly different from the peak, slightly different from the peak of the likelihood function itself, okay, which is actually in very good agreement with the theoretical expectations. Okay, so this is an update. And so if we were using the same estimator on year 1 and year 3, we would stick to the purple. Nothing has changed there. Okay, but because we changed the estimator and we improved the estimator, the tension is now much less between the quadrupole, octopole, and the theoretical expectations. Okay. Now, it was also pointed out by various groups, among which so Drao, that if you look at the lowest multiple on the sky, so if you map those multiple one by one, so L equal 2, L equal 3, 4, 5, 6, you would see that actually L equal 2 and 3 are aligned. Okay. And the fact that you have a combination of this alignment, low L power at L equal 2, the significance was claimed to be that. It was claimed to be insignificant at 4 to the 10 minus 5 level. Okay, to be quite a severe degeneracy, it's quite a severe discrepancy. And as we all know, there is a very strong posterior bias here. So this result can be very well potentially significant, but it also might be very biased because of an unaccounted for posterior bias. So the update on this is that basically nothing has changed here. The year 3 maps are completely identical for temperature at large scales, as they should be. And so I'm fairly confident that if those analyses were to be performed again, the same result will come out. Okay. And so this is nothing has changed there. This is what I showed earlier, year 1 minus year 3, you see there is no difference at the significance level. So
you have to be almost blind enough to see that it's not Gauss changed.
What do you mean?
Well, you can see by eye the
north
and south.
Yeah,
atmosphere.
I'm just saying that this has on the channel. I'm not saying it's not there, right? It's just the question is. There are two questions now. So what do you do with it? How do you exactly evaluate the likelihood of it? And also, how do you understand it physically? Those are still open questions. Okay. So the way we addressed that, we tried something else, which is, as Joe was hinting at, there are two things going on. There's There are three things going on flow down. First, you have the low L power, which is not really an issue as we saw, but still, it's a slightly low power. You have an alignment of the lowest multiple, and also you have north-south symmetry for some statistics, okay? It was, as a matter of fact, if you describe, you could unify all those effects if you consider the sky to be a Gaussian random field, T, modulated by an arbitrary function 1 plus F, where F is a completely arbitrary function, which whose origin is unknown, okay? So if you describe, the question we ask is, can we describe the observed temperature field as a Gaussian, an isotropic field, an isotropic field on large scale, multiplied by a function, okay? And it was pointed out by different groups, so Gordon collaborators and Archeon, that actually such a description is useful because, okay, if F equals zero, you are back to the usual assumption, so no, just the observed scalar is just a Gaussian number, okay? But if F is dipolar, you would entail an asymmetry, okay? So if F was dipolar, you would have multiplied your Gaussian field by a function with a positive and negative side, so you would create some asymmetry. And also because it's a multiplication, it will entail a coupling in L space, and you will have some leakage going from L equal to 2, 3, or 4, and you will also tend to align L equal to 2 to 3, with the dipole of your F function. Okay, and so this way you could reproduce somehow what is observed. Okay. And if F was polypolar, you could also have the same phenomenology, and also it was shown on a toy model that you could actually, if you look at the power spectrum of the Gaussian field, you could bring up the quadrupole, the low quadrupole. Okay. So by having this description, you could, in principle, which is non-physically motivated, right? Just a toy model, but you could, in principle, address all the three aspects of the large-scale temperature modulation in a united manner. And so we tested this, and actually for a given F, for a given power spectrum for this field here, and for a given F, and F is decomposed into spherical harmonics, so all parameters would be the F and F here, and we decompose either to L equal 1, so dipolar or polypolar L equal 2. For a given F and LN, you can compute exactly the likelihood of the sky, of the observed sky, accounting for the masking also of the galaxy, which is an important thing here. Okay. So what you have here, the results are the following. So if you were to describe the observed sky T as Gaussian field times this function, the best fit function, if you take n max equal 1, is this one. Okay. And so you see that you pick up more or less either the axis of evil or the north-south asymmetry, okay, which is what was claimed before in literature. But you also see that the amplitude of this F function is fairly small. It's about 0.-3, okay, 0.13. Okay, so it's quite a small function. And this is the best fit. Let me get back. So we can know how to compute exactly this likelihood, and we know we can solve easily, we'll do that through a Markov chain, you can solve for the maximum likelihood value for CL and FLM simultaneously. Okay, that's what we do. And this function here is the best fit for F if you take L max equal 1. Okay, just to move this here. You see that you pick up, and you see that this is fairly aligned with the ecliptic. It's more or less aligned with the ecliptic pole, which are here. And so I believe this is the same thing that was noticed by various authors. Now, if you go to L equal 2, you see other features which are less clear, but you still see that some stability of this axis here. Okay. Again, you see that this map is fairly small, 0.02. Okay.
Well, the other axis is actually 90 degrees, so
what you're picking is the equator. Right, you're picking the noise at some level, right? So the question is, what's the significance of this? Okay. basically, for dipolar modulation, so L max equal 1, you have delta k square of 3 for 3 extra parameters. Okay, so basically you are changing your delta square by 1 per extra parameter. So it means that it's not very significant. If you go at 4 L max equal 2, you have 8 extra parameters, okay, because so F1, 0, F1, 1, F2, 1, 0, F2, 1, F2, 2. And again, basically you have delta k square of about 8 for 8 extra parameter, so nothing very significant. And also, you see that if you look at the CS of this guy and compare them to the CL of this guy, which is the one we deal with usually, you see that they're fairly ancient and they're actually completely identical.
So just a question, I mean, isn't this an efficiency of the model rather than...
Yeah, oh yeah.
So because, you know, I can actually come up with a model which is
sure.
An improvement of 16 with bigger effort.
Yeah, that's exactly, I agree. No, it's I agree. This, all those conclusions are model dependent, right? They come from this choice of parameterization. But you could have if you have a theory that predicted a very specific parameterization, you could fit for it and it would be more meaningful. But the fact is that we have no theoretical insight, we don't know what to expect, so that we can play with this kind of thing. But so the only motivation for this one, the only motivation for this one was to try to handle in a united manner all the issues at low end.
So okay. The simplest thing would be just to have an anisotropic correlation, right?
Yeah, but that's one way of doing it, actually. Because, yes?
A couple of years ago, there was this dodecahedral sort of universe that was supposed to explain some of these low-level issues. What's happened to that?
It's more or less ruled out now.
It's now ruled out by...
Actually, it was ruled out very, very early on.
They were still saying they could live, though.
Well, most trivial topologies have been ruled out. Because basically, there was the first claim, which was the most vocal claim. Actually, from was to do that, they just look at the low quadrupole, okay? So they'd say, okay, if we had a finite universe, we have some truncation of the power at the scale of the universe, at the scale of the scale of your universe, that repeats itself. And so you will truncate your power at the larger scales. And because of that, you can cut the power at L equal 2 and 3. And they just use this, and claim that it was a significant prediction. Okay. But the thing is that if you have such a model, you also have very specific signatures on the sky, which are, so the fact that you will have serotonins on the sky where temperature are identical. And those were looked for after, and they were not found. Okay. And they were not found for
most cases, but I didn't think the dodecahedral case.
Yeah, I think this is one of them.
I mean, this, you can always run away and say that maybe the fundamental domain is bigger than last happening.
So. Yes.
Right. Yeah, but then you can say it's
bigger.
Right. So then it's only unobservable. So, but for most cases I know it, I mean, we found no signature.
It's possible to cut the power with something which is bigger than last happening. So.
Yeah, but I'm saying for the circles. Sure. I mean, yeah.
So. Given that it's still there in the case, the question is it 4 parameters or is it primordial? It's primordial contradicts spatial.
Don't ask me. I don't know.
It's everything.
Yeah. I don't know. The thing, I mean, we are.
why should we be?
Well, that's the thing, right? You have two issues.
The inflation falls immediately, but I think we can get much more
profit. Well, it's not immediate. You can fine tune things and to make things work.
Fine tune things.
But I'm saying that if the model is not favored by the data,
that's a conclusion, yeah.
So there might be other models that are better favored.
Right. That's right.
How do you fine tune things?
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about for people. Trying to fine tune perturbation and trying to correlate adiabatic and isocurvature perturbation and with some success, but it's extremely fine tuning, so it's not physically measured.
It could just be an accident, too.
Yeah.
It could be what, sir?
An accident.
An axis.
An axis.
I don't know.
I mean, they just happen to line up, right?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I mean,
well,
we have to.
That's a different issue. I mean,
it's entirely possible in an inflationary context that they could just like, they just
that's
like,
also possible. Just in this case, because you could also say, oh, then actually, Romney is too. It's just an accident.
But the significance of this is not, you know,
yeah, no,
it's so important.
So the point is, he's actually more significant than the Tillman one. So you might say any one.
That, yeah, well,
I'm not sure if I'm saying that. She's much better substantially with things, isn't there?
We can all spring in multiverses.
You can.
Do whatever
we can. Yeah. We can all do many things. But, no, but, okay, so I think the takeaway, taking a message here is that. Statistics, we are a very few number of nodes, one observable, and so statistics are very tricky and there is very strong posterior bias. So whatever you say, you have to be very careful, and whatever you read, also you have to be very careful. And also, the second thing is that we are in a theoretical no man's land, so we don't know what to look for, we don't know what to expect. So that makes all this business a bit tricky. But yeah. Okay, conclusions. We have now produced well-characterized polarizing function maps. After removing foregrounds, we are detecting a specific randomization signature in CMB in an EE power spectrum with the best fit of scale at 0.09. And so that's 3 sigma. The simplest flap lambda n plus one model is still the best fit, is still survive most of its detailed tests. Data have a red spectral index and significantly deviant from the Harrison-Zenovich spectrum. Okay. More complex structure in the initial power spectrum do not seem to be significantly favored, to be statistically favored, sorry. We can now place stronger constraints using double map and other data set on neutrinos, quality of dark energy, and geometry of the universe. And as you know, all data on all the direct products are available. All time sample, the maps, noise current matrices, simulation not yet, but they're coming. The likelihood codes on all the Markov chains are available on the web at Lambda. So we are looking forward to your analysis.
Sort of advertise my talk this afternoon, and right. I mean, I'm probably going to take a fight with people over your assertion that there is a little bit to go about.
Sure. Good. Okay. Not that many assumptions. Okay. So you should come. It's going to be entertaining.
Yeah, I guess I have a general question about where we're going. So. You said already that in some sense the 3-year data did better than what was planned originally.
Right.
So if we look ahead and say the next, for example, for Vivo.
So if you look at this plot here. So WMAP has been for me for 6 years, and we're asking for 8. And tau, currently, we are about tau is open 0.09 plus or minus 0.03. Okay? With 8 here, you can go down to about 0.14. Okay, so it's still a factor 2 as compared to now. So you can expect factor 2 in here. Basically, I mean, factor 2 in here almost. Okay. So it's quite significant. So this is, I think this is the most interesting to be expected. On our limits would be, okay, we are here, and this will be, and the tau improvement, we are very much noise dominated, right? So you really just care by temperature map by on Q nearby square root of going from, let's say, 4 to 8 is just square root of 2, factor of 2 in the power spectrum, and power spectrum is sensitive to tau square, so you end up with what I said. For R here, you can expect a factor of 2 also, with 8, going to 8 years. Okay. So you should hit the 0.3 region, which starts to be very interesting inflation wise. But it should be marginal. I think you will need something, you will definitely need something else. And there are a lot of experiments that are targeting this, either here or this window for B models. And this is going to happen in 3, 4, 5 years. So yeah, it's very exciting. So yeah, within 2010, we should know much, much more about that.
Is it going to wait years? Is it?
No, it's not clear yet. We are asked for it. Well, NASA policy is a bit not very favorable to this kind of thing right now, so nobody knows what's going to happen. But 6 years, in principle, was guaranteed. But we can always still shut it down anytime.
Questions?
Great. Thanks, Maria.